Hey everybody, Dan Sanchez here with the AI Microskills podcast, and I'm excited because the guest I had on today I actually hosted on a different show. Yes, I have two shows. One is the AI Microskills podcast, and the other one is Attention, a show about audience growth for those who want to build an audience online, whether it's on social or email, podcast, whatever it is. Over there, I interview creators who have grown an audience. And this particular person had grown an audience on LinkedIn around, you guessed it, AI, which makes it appropriate for both shows. But because I interviewed him for the Attention podcast, I had to make this short little intro a little bit different and then cut over to that one. So in that show, you will be getting on the front end of the show his audience growth story. But on the back end of that show, you will be getting a lot more about AI and how to leverage it for your business, which is the whole point of this show. So I hope you enjoy this episode. And also, it's a good plug for the other show, isn't it? So go check that one out too at danchez.com/podcast. So let's get into it. Welcome back to the Attention Podcast. I'm Dan Sanchez, and today I'm joined by Andrew Bolus, who is become known for AI for marketing and has built an audience from 1,000 to 25,000 followers on LinkedIn just within the last year. So, Andrew, I can't wait to dive in the story. Can't wait to learn a little bit more about AI. But before we get started, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on the show, Dan.
Yeah. Man, I'm excited to get into this one because I love stories of growth. I love talking to creators and how they're able to get there because it takes so much effort, right? Especially in the beginning. But before we dive into like how you grew so fast, what were you doing before then? Like what was post growth? What did that look like? And then what caused like what became the catalyst for the rise?
Sure. So about a year ago, a little over a year ago, I was actually working in marketing full time at companies. At that time, I was a CMO. At that point, I've been doing marketing for 15 years. I lost my job due to layoffs. And at that point, too, people were getting laid off left and right, especially marketers. I think some of them still are getting laid off. So I knew it was going to be challenging to find a marketing job. So I basically had two plans. One is I'm going to start doing consulting, which I did start doing. And had some traction there. But even within consulting, I realized there's a lot of consulting and agencies out there. So how do you differentiate yourself? So you need to build a personal brand. And that's how I got into LinkedIn. So I basically started posting on LinkedIn about a year ago. So same time last year.
Wow. Okay. So December last year, you start hitting it hard. Did you get some initial traction there? Did things go well?
So when I started, I had 1,000 connections, all former coworkers from decade plus of me working in different office jobs. Once in a while, they would like one of my posts, but not really because they don't really comment. They're not like other creators on the platform. And I also found that a lot of marketers don't really know LinkedIn like they think they do because they just think it's another channel.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really getting much traction. Like my first month, I would post, I would comment a lot on others. Some of them would comment back, which was nice, but there wasn't much traction. And I realized like I actually had to learn this from other LinkedIn creators who've had some success, not necessarily sort of marketing or assume that I just know how it works just because I know other like marketing channels.
It was funny with my own story. I thought I knew LinkedIn too until I got hired at an agency where the CEO was already like hot. I don't know. He was already a creator on LinkedIn and rolling and had been doing it for a while. So he got me plugged in. And he was like, no, this is how you really do LinkedIn. And that's finally where I figured it out and started growing myself. Otherwise, it's like it's kind of painful at the beginning because you start off with all these connections and then you realize you're like, oh, like 3/4 of all my connections don't spend time on LinkedIn. They're on other platforms or they're working. So you have to end up trying to build a following of the people who actually like frequent the website. How did you unlock some of those first followers?
So that's a great point you bring up. A lot of the engagement on LinkedIn, the initial engagement, like when you post in the first hour or two, which determines how much the algorithm shows your post over the next day or two, a lot of it comes from other creators and people posting on there. So it is a lot of networking. So that was a big unlock for me. I started by building a list of other similar size creators who covered marketing at the time, because that's what I was talking about. I would keep a note of when they post. I would comment on their posts. A lot of them would then comment on mine. That got things rolling. And then I also started trying to talk to any creator on there who would talk to me who had some success and just asking what's working, how do you plan your posts, what topics do you decide to cover, and what formats are working for you. Just start asking a lot of questions.
Nice. So you actually find the community, you start participating in it, engaging with the other creators, and then naturally, did you start engaging with people in their comments too?
Yeah, so and if I was to do it all over, even before I ever posted, I just start by commenting and reposting so others post, because early on, if you don't have that many followers, it doesn't really matter. Nobody's going to see what you're doing on there. And if you comment, repost, and then send a connection request, 90% of people will accept it, even if they're bigger creators. And if you just do that for like a month and get like a few hundred of those as your connections, then the first time you post, they're going to see your post. They're going to remember that, oh, this person always comments on my post. And a lot of them will comment on yours and your post will take off. So I didn't do it that way, but that's how I would do it now.
Huh. Dang, I've never thought of that extra step of reposting their post to get their attention before hitting the connect to request button. That's smart. It's funny. I tell people this and people, I don't know what it is. Like you either very few people get this, but I'm like, the game in LinkedIn is in the comments. Like almost imagine a party and everybody's in separate rooms getting to know each other. And you just have to go into each room and work the room. You go and talk to people, and then some people remember you, some people won't, but that's okay. You'll find those other people in different rooms at different times. And the more conversations you have and the more rooms you work, the more it's unreasonable that people aren't going to know you. And they see your post, they're going to engage with it. Why? Because they know you and you've had some good conversations before. It's kind of like the same thing with networking in like a new city. You land a new city where you go out to lots of meet and greets and get to know people, and all of a sudden people know you. It just takes time and a lot of effort, but
Yeah,
it's not hard.
I really like that analogy. And the comments are like a low pressure way to build connections. As in, you comment, the person replies. Well, now if you send them a connection request, there's context there. And with bigger creators too, like it helps if you just comment a few different times. They know your face. You become a real person for them. And I say that because they just get a lot of comments. So yeah, I think it's a low pressure way, as in it's just like small talk. So it's much easier than just writing like a paragraph long connection request to someone you don't know and just hoping they read it and accept or whatever.
So you have things going kind of cranking here on LinkedIn. Did you ever like work with other platforms? Do you ever start a podcast to get to know people better or other channels? Or was it mainly, has the growth mainly just been LinkedIn?
So no, before LinkedIn, I didn't. Other than managing like company pages, which I did at my full-time jobs, I've managed podcasts too, like for companies. But I was more doing it from the back end. Like, and it was never my face. It was never my own personal brand. And even on the podcast, it was me like asking speakers, inviting them. I wasn't the one interviewing them. I wasn't the host. So what I had to figure out was more like how LinkedIn itself works. And once I figured that out, the rest was easy because I had the marketing background, so I knew how to write very strong hooks or intro sentences at the start of the post. I knew how to like research what topics are trending in a specific industry and focus my posts on those topics because they're likely to get traction and things like that.
The reason why I ask is that ended up being like a big 1-2 punch, but in like a friendly, kind manner. It's like getting to know people on comments, then reaching out to them via connection request, getting into the DMs, and then usually like if I wanted to get to know a creator, it's like part of why this podcast exists, is to build relationships. Because I don't know what happens, but there's like a serendipity that happens is the more friends you can make and the more people you can help, and especially if you're getting them onto your show to shine the light on them and what they're good at and all they're doing. The better that is for business, whether you're doing it for your company or for your own solopreneurship or consultancy, I find that it just goes well, and it's a lot of fun to meet people in the process. That's been my game on LinkedIn for forever is LinkedIn and podcasting. podcasting and LinkedIn. Of course, I was working for a podcast agency where that was just, that was like their main strategy was that game. But now I'm excited because AI has kind of been a new thing for me, but it's something that became pivotal for you in your own growth. Is that what led to the major switch for your growth, is when you started shifting to AI? When did you make that choice, and how did you begin applying that to the kind of content you were creating?
Sure. So through the end of June on LinkedIn, I was just talking about marketing. At that point, it's been 6-7 months of me on there. Had slow, steady growth. Like, I got up to 6,000 followers, which is not bad. But I was getting tired of LinkedIn in a lot of ways. I wasn't seeing as much traction. The effort I was putting in versus the results were just not that good. So I paused and I started thinking, hey, like, I need to make a shift here. I was using AI tools, you know, sort of like started like in spring of this year, but I wasn't really writing about it. And then all of a sudden I started noticing people who, I don't know how to put this like nicely, but like they were average marketers, not necessarily great, but not bad either, who were now covering AI. And to be fair, like not even covering AI that well. But they were getting a ton of traction on LinkedIn. And I started looking into it and I found out, well, LinkedIn is, or Microsoft, the parent company of LinkedIn, is a major investor in OpenAI. I think they own half of OpenAI, if not even slightly more. They actually promote AI topics, but this wasn't also just a LinkedIn phenomenon. Like on X or Twitter, a lot of people were covering AI, getting a lot of traction. Yeah. And then I started looking at the AI content specifically. A lot of it was by creators who knew AI, but didn't have a business background. So I figured, okay, well, if I start covering AI and I inject in my marketing knowledge and my business background, I can see this sort of taking off. And planned my first post. Took a while to get that post out, but that post went viral. And, you know, that's when I realized, okay, like I have something here.
Yeah. When you say viral, how much is viral for you?
So at that time I had 6,000 followers. The post had between 250,000 to 300,000 impressions, like 200 reposts, 1,000 plus comments or something, the last I checked. So that at that time I've never had something that successful.
Dang. That's pretty viral for LinkedIn. I mean, going viral on LinkedIn is much harder than it is on something like TikTok, but when it goes viral, it's hot. AI is also just super relevant to a lot of people, on a lot of people's minds. I remember I was working for a tech company 8 months ago, and we created a cheat sheet, and the VP of marketing posted it as a one-off. And she's regular on LinkedIn, but I wouldn't call her a creator on LinkedIn, you know, where somebody's rolling up their sleeves and really trying to grow on LinkedIn. She wasn't that. She posted it. And I swear, it probably had 120,000 impressions on it or something crazy like that, which it's just a lot for somebody who's not regular on LinkedIn. And I'm like, it was in the education marketing space, this ChatGPT cheat sheet for higher ed. I'm like, yeah, every higher ed marketer on the platform probably saw that over a week.
Yeah.
It was just nuts. The AI content has been absolutely crazy. But you're right. I'm not seeing the hype around AI has made me mad, because we've all been into ChatGPT and saw the wonder of it, and then everybody's talking about it, and the best you hear is go play with ChatGPT. I'm like, what the heck? Like, play with ChatGPT is the best advice you have to learn this massive thing? Prompt engineering. You're like, okay, what? It's made me frustrated a few times, right? It's almost like you want to learn graphic design. They're like, go play with Photoshop, which if you're a marketer and you've ever played with Photoshop off, like just off the cuff, downloaded it and gave it a shot, you know, that probably didn't go well, right? That's how I feel like it is with AI knowledge or AI education right now. It's kind of like, go play with this. You're like, no.
Yeah.
It's gotta be more than that.
The problem too is a lot of content out there about how to get like a small thing done or some kind of tactic. There isn't really content to actually achieve a goal with AI. Like a goal as in, hey, I'm building a marketing campaign. How can AI help me with each step of the campaign? That's the kind of stuff where then you need someone who's done marketing campaigns and now knows how to use the AI tools, combines both, and then gives you like practical ways of actually using it. Like that stuff you don't see like a lot of out there.
I find that most AI stuff is like really shallow. It's like tools pushing the envelope in a really niche way, but it's not helpful. What do you find is actually helpful right now? Or maybe like, what are you posting that's getting the most feedback from people saying, wow, I did this and it freaking worked. And now this is like, this, I'm using it over and over again because it's so helpful. What is that stuff?
Sure. So, and I think you're right. Like a lot of AI content is almost like junk food. You've probably even seen the cheat sheets. Cheat sheets do great on LinkedIn right now. And they are like, if you're trying to grow, find a good designer who can build cheat sheets and you'll grow. But I can't imagine anybody's actually taking the cheat sheet and necessarily using it to accomplish much. What I've tried more recently, there's two things that I've tried that I work where it's a Loom recording of me accomplishing something using an AI tool. And by accomplishing something, it's something like, okay, I'm going to document the step-by-step process fully without typing a word myself. You know, here's a tool that does it. It's a browser extension. And at the end of it, I show here's all the steps it documented. And you know, here's how, because now people know how to use that tool, and I gave them a business use case that they can apply that works well. These are like 2-3 minute Loom videos. I'm actually planning to do more of those. And then with my carousels too, instead of just saying 20 prompts to do X or 20 tools to do Y, it's more like a step-by-step guide that by the end of it they accomplish something. So like the guide for how to build your custom GPTs, it's three sections. It's ideation, coming up with a good idea and giving them examples. It's now you're going to build the custom GPT, and it's three, promoting it, how to actually promote it and get people using it. So that gets a lot more traction than just someone just saying, here's steps to just build your custom GPT.
So what you're putting out there are use cases. I've seen a number of your posts. It seems like a lot of your stuff focuses around highly specific chain prompts. With and you kind of bracket in like put your information here and then give it this prompt and then put your when it gives you that reply, then respond with this and then respond with this. Because we all know like if you can do really good chain prompts, you can get some really good leverage out of ChatGPT. So is a lot of your content focused on like chain, I don't know, I guess you could call them chain prompting templates. Is
It,
that's the best description I can give for them?
yeah, yeah, exactly. Like it's a more of a conversational way of using ChatGPT, as in you start with one thing, you get a response, then you keep and with my guys too, like even though you can get the prompts, copy and paste them and use them, I'm really trying to get them to learn how to use ChatGPT or whatever themselves and using the prompts more as an example. So I always try to explain the logic even behind the step. So like the marketing campaign one, where you're building a marketing campaign with ChatGPT, it starts with like market research, and then the second step is ideation. And I explain that like so they're even learning how to do a campaign from start to finish, and they have the prompts in there. So that seems to be like resonating with people.
I remember trying out one once, like when I was playing with ChatGPT. I was logging in more and more regularly, usually for content repurposing as a marketer. I was pretty common, got very common first thing we were all doing. And Maya Grossman, who's into a career, I don't know, climbing the ladder, working your way up from start to VP. She puts out this chain prompt that just blew my mind back in the spring that was like, hey, like ask at first. Tell ChatGPT this and then put in these six prompts back to back. And then each one builds on the other one. It ended up giving this like master plan for how to grow your career with only maybe like the only thing you would customize it is your job title. What are you now? And then start building a plan to get to the next level. So if you're from director to VP or from VP to CMO, and that's all you're customizing with. But like the information it gave back like blew my mind as far as like how good of a plan it could build for a career acceleration. I was like, oh my gosh. But I still didn't even think through like what could I be building right now based on my own plans and processes for how to do this. It wasn't until I discovered custom GPTs just a few weeks ago that I was like, oh, ChatGPT is now like a genius intern that lacks common sense. If I can just give it step-by-step directions, it can actually execute it pretty well every time. Where, like, I'm sure a lot of businesses just don't know. They can take a lot of their step-by-step processes they're all doing manually right now and don't even realize that it can be offloaded to ChatGPT to execute. Something that would take 2 hours can now become 10 minutes or 5 minutes. How are you helping people understand, like, what they can automate within their own businesses?
Yeah, I think the way you put it is important, because so there's two types of businesses that are interested in AI. Businesses that are not really, like, they don't have processes in place. They don't even have, like, a real marketing or sales or a go-to-market strategy that's working, and all of a sudden they want to start with AI. I get DMs from those people often. I don't even at this point engage much, because I know, like, this is a person just like, they're just maybe an AI enthusiast. So I'm seeing you're smiling, so I'm guessing you've seen some of those as well. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
So we're marketers. We've both worked in multiple companies, and we know most companies don't have processes. Period.
Yeah.
Or even, yeah. But even then, you're like,
So with those companies, there isn't, like, it's very hard to actually, like, you can recommend random tools to use if they have a very specific problem, but it's very hard to build, like a system that's going to actually give them, like, a very high ROI. The better companies are generally, like, mid-sized, slightly bigger, and they already have, like, documented processes for, like, you know, their marketing campaigns, their sales process. When you have that, then it's very easy to take that and take each piece and figure out, with the combination of, like, ChatGPT, other AI tools like Zapier in the middle, and integrations, how to, you know, turn each piece into, like, an AI powered process or whatever you want to call it, and kind of build up upon each other. And then, you know, I've seen it work really well specifically in marketing and in sales, because also specifically with sales, like, salespeople hate doing a lot of the mundane CRM data input, a lot of the outreach, a lot of those things. And that's what AI is really good for, if you feed it all the context it needs.
Yeah. One of the first things I did with a custom GPT was I took a process I developed. Not I developed, I actually discovered it from a book called Hello, My Name is Awesome by Andrea Watkins. Fantastic book on naming things, because I was working for this podcast agency naming podcasts at least once or twice a week. I just had to come up with great names, and usually multiple names. We're an agency. I got to serve up multiple names for them to pick from, and they all have to be great, because I have to live with it if they pick a bad name, right? So I had to level up the naming process, and it was a good process, very logical how you would work through this process. Multi-step, it'd take me about 2 or 3 hours. It's a serious chunk of time. And I found out that part of it, ChatGPT can execute. Like, the process is taking the category that you're in. Maybe you want to start a cybersecurity podcast for cybersecurity experts, whatever. You give it that. It comes up with 10 words. It takes those words, finds five rhymes or rhyming words for those words. So now you have a list of 50 words. And then it needs to go and find 5 idioms for each of the rhyming words that are the rhyming words have. So you might start with something like cyber and have hyper. And then you would find an idiom for hyper, like, I'm struggling to find an idiom for hyper in my head, but you'd find the idiom or the phrase that it's in, and then you would switch out hyper with cyber and with the idiom, and that would be the name. And then it'd compile a list of, like, hundreds of names, and then that's normally the process I would follow, but it takes time to go through it all, right? To research every name, every rhyme, and then every idiom for every rhyme. You know, you build an Excel sheet of all these things, and you manually go through them all and start looking for the interesting ones that came out of the process. ChatGPT can do all that. Now, I had to chain prompt it, because it don't only give you so much text in one, and it's obviously putting out a lot of names, but dang. So I put it into a custom GPT and called it NameFrame, and now I'm just using it to name things. What took 2 or 3 hours now only takes 5 minutes. So I'm like, dang. So, like, how come more people aren't figuring out this custom GPT thing? Because all your internal processes, or not all of them, but a lot of them can be turned into these little custom GPTs. Even if you don't sell them or release them to the public, you could just customize it for your thing and then just execute it. But I'm starting to find more and more use cases for these. Have you developed a lot of these custom GPTs and like start releasing them for people to use, or are you using internally?
I'm using some internally, but what I really liked about your example, there's a few things there. One is you've done this process yourself quite a few times, and you had a framework for doing it successfully, down to the steps and how to sort of get from the start to the finish. When you take something like that and like wrap it up in prompts or a set of prompts, and then now a custom GPT, it works pretty well. So I haven't released any. I have been using custom GPTs, and I know a lot of also other AI creators or people who have courses are actually starting to take their collections of prompts or mega prompts that they give away during the courses and are part of the learning experience and actually wrap them in custom GPTs, because the custom GPTs, you can actually have a lot more control, and it's easier than the prompts. And then also there's opportunities with custom GPTs in the future where you can like charge a fee or whatever to access all of them or things like that.
Chat, they haven't started allowing people to charge for these, right? As far as I know, they're all like, it's either private, available by link, or public. Those are the only options.
No, they promised an app store and then said that it's going to come out early next year. So the ones that people are charging for now are private, and you only find out about them if you
If you have the
obviously
link.
pay to get access to them.
That makes a lot of sense. Right now, I'm like using them as like, I'm probably going to start using it as a lead magnet and just like, hey, get access to it if you subscribe to my email list or something like that. It'll be interesting to see if you can come up with one that's worthwhile on a marketplace. Most of the ones I try are neat, but not like worthy of a monthly fee yet. I'm like, sometime soon, I'm sure.
There's a couple of people who've had like a lot of success with them on LinkedIn, where there was one person, they're pretty well known for AI, and they released a custom GPT for LinkedIn post writing, but they actually injected all of their best practices,
That's
everything in
interesting.
it. And I remember the post went viral, and then I checked with the person, and they told me got him like 700 leads or something, because there was something inside of it that said like you have to whatever, like sign up or something. I don't remember exactly the mechanism,
He
but within
told
2 days, it,
ChatGPT to throw an ad in there. He probably co-wrote.
yeah, but it can be, it can be great for lead gen. I mean, it's almost like a free app that you're releasing, right? So a lot of people, I think, are more than willing to, to sign up or whatever it is, if it's free.
The problem I've had is I even want to share it with people just for feedback, and they're like, "Well, I don't have the paid version of ChatGPT." I'm like, "Dude, like, how do you not pay for this already? It's so useful." Oh well, that's where I'm finding more and more is a lot of my peers don't even have the paid account. So I mean, some do, but many, many don't. Even if they're enthusiasts, like they love the AI stuff and they're reading about it a lot, they're not paying for it yet. So I'm like, "Come on!"
Yeah,
Ugh,
I
I feel like
had.
we're so early. So early with AI still.
No, we're still early. It's funny. There was a company that was talking to me about doing like a workshop for their team, and then it had to be put off because it was that period where OpenAI closed off
Oh
new
yeah, the paid
signups
accounts.
for paid accounts because the servers were overloaded and stuff. And she's like, "Well, we're waiting for, the signups to reopen so we can get like our team members' accounts."
I remember even at I was at a tech company that had a strong AI focus because they were building AI into their tech, and we all had just one shared Pro ChatGPT or Plus account. Now I'm looking back and I'm like, dang, how come we didn't all have their own accounts? But I guess we all shared one and it was fine. But now, because I'm using mine more and more, I'm actually hitting the limit with how much I can prompt it in a day, which I'm like, dang. Like, you're starting to use it a lot when you're running to it's like it's capping you at the plus account because you've prompted it too many times. It's written too much for you. You gotta wait till the next day. I'm usually running into it at the end of the day, but it's happening more and more often. Is that a problem you run into often? You hitting the prompt limits?
Yeah, there are two. I guess if you're only doing prompts, if you do mega prompts, it counts them as one request. And if you write the mega prompt properly, it can do like a bunch of five prompts in one, basically. But then, yeah, but I run into it more when I'm using DALL-E inside of ChatGPT, because if you're doing image generation, you might need to see like 4, 5, 10 variations until you get one that you like or whatever, and it's just one click to like regenerate. So that's where I'm running into it the most. I know people who just get like a couple of different logins or premium accounts
Interesting
just for
to get
that.
away, get around
Yeah.
that. It's funny they don't let you like upgrade or pay for more usage limits, but whatever. They're just trying to keep up with their own success. So, what are you most excited about? Like just around that's coming out, but it's just around the corner. It's not quite here yet, but as far as being able to impact marketing and see great ROI from AI, what do you think is just around the corner that you're waiting for?
So I think there's two parts to it. Like on the user side, I am seeing a lot more adoption now, as in there's a lot more openness to using these tools because people realize AI is not going anywhere. And keep in mind, like people like me and you were the exception here, as in like we're in these tools every day and using them. Most people maybe have heard of ChatGPT, used it once, use it once a week, once a month. But now that people are getting serious, companies are also more open to workshops and trainings for their teams. So I think on the one thing, the users are actually taking it serious, especially companies, which I feel like that's where the biggest value unlock is for businesses. And then on the other side, the tools themselves are starting to think more about like business use cases and things like group access. So for example, if you try to use ChatGPT at a company and every person has their own login, well, now you have to take the same context, like brand guidelines, brand voice, style, all that stuff, and feed it maybe into like your custom instructions or whatever it is for each user, right? Like there, a lot of these tools too, like right now are more on like the B2C side or like one person using them. So there is also now like, I know like some of the AI writing tools, they do have team accounts that share context, share brand guidelines, and you just set them up once. Everybody on the team now, when they put in ask it to write a blog post, they get something that's like on brand, on with the company's voice.
That's huge. I've noticed Jarvis has been pushing hard in that territory, right? And that's where they're ahead of ChatGPT. The funny thing is, I'm like, I could probably still build what Jarvis is doing just with custom chip GPTs, because you can just like upload your own knowledge and instructions and have it do some pretty consistent work. But still, Jarvis has a few different advantages built into it right now that probably make it worthwhile if you're doing a lot of AI writing to use something like Jarvis versus just ChatGPT.
Yeah, no, I agree. And does Jarvis let you like pick the model, or is it just like by default, like OpenAI,
You
ChatGPT?
know, I haven't been in Jarvis for a while or since they've adopted multiple
Okay.
models. That's kind of like their thing. When ChatGPT came out, I'm like, oh, that's gonna kill Jarvis. Or no, it's not Jarvis anymore, it's Jasper. I keep Jarvis was
Yeah,
such a strong
okay,
name,
yeah.
and then they had to change it to Jasper, right? Now they're like, well, we use all the models. We just lose all the models because I think a lot of people are like, well, I'm just gonna use ChatGPT because it's free or way cheaper. They're like, we just use the best of each model. And I don't really know how they're doing that. I don't know if you can pick it. There's advantages to each one, of course. Like if you want to pull something, like if you want to do more SEO heavy stuff, then you being able to use Bard for doing some of that query research is probably going to be better than using Bing, right? Which is what
Exactly, yeah.
ChatGPT has access to. So it just depends.
So the other tool that's doing really cool things right now is Copy.ai, which is known, it's been around forever, like for the copywriting and writing. They now have these automation workflows that can be built with a single prompt. So you say, I'm gonna be doing like help me do outreach on LinkedIn to sales leaders at companies of this size, use my sales outreach script or whatever, or sales outreach process, find their details, and write a personalized message to each of them. And it'll actually then create like seven steps in a sequence. You can look at each step. So maybe the first step is grabbing the person's information from their LinkedIn profile. Second step is writing the personalized message. Like it basically creates these workflows all from a prompt, and you can go into each step and customize it a bit more. And then once you're done with this workflow, you can just feed it a CSV or use their API to have it like running in an automated fashion. So I think things like that too are pretty cool. People are it's a new thing, and they're still trying to get people to use it, but the fact that you can create an entire workflow like that from like a prompt describing the steps is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's huge. I'm looking forward to this year more automation and AI happening. Right now, I feel like everything's manual. I have to manually go to ChatGPT. I have to manually go to Midjourney to produce things. But I'm like, come on. Like, what if you know the prompt that you want and you want every time this thing hits Zapier, I want it to prompt get this and then put it over here. You could technically do that through Zapier, but it's not easy. Like, none of that's like, there's certain things that I want to have happen that I'm like, how come this isn't happening automatically? Like, it should be. It's just time. I'm just waiting for all the devs to catch up to build it into their tools. Like, this podcast, I want to be able to publish it. And like, why do I have to write show notes anymore? It's stupid. Like, the transcript is there. It does an amazing job of summarizing, coming up with the timestamps, but I still have to, even with Cast Magic, I could take the audio from this very podcast and I will upload it. It will transcribe it, AI enhance it, give me all the content, but I still have to copy and paste it all back into the host in order to get my title and my show notes. And I'm like, this should just be done. I should just be able to record this, publish it, maybe trim the edges or whatever, but eventually that'll be automated too with AI. It'll know that I messed up at minute 35, right? And then I just publish and bam, it's out. Zencastr is close, which is why I use that tool, where it can like automatically create clips. And then it transcribes the clip and then uses that transcription to drive the writing for the social post. Because, you know, you just can't post the clip alone. You got to have some writing with it. And you got to have the title and, of course, the captions. But Zencastr does that all with one click. And I don't even think about the writing anymore. I just like, oh, that's a good clip. Kill that clip, post that clip. And it just posts it out everywhere for you. I'm like, more of that's coming, but I'm just eager to see it happen with all the tools. I'm like, why am I still copying and pasting crap? It should just be baked in now.
Yeah, and having like used multiple tools because each one is good at different things. I don't know how much if you use like Descript, but Descript is starting to add in more AI features. So Descript's thing is like they transcribed any audio video file you add. Now I think they are adding clips too, where you ask it to find interesting moments and it generates clips. I think it's a newer feature. I Descript has publishing built in to certain channels. Again, I don't know how I haven't used the publishing part, but there are a few companies like that I do think are in a place to automate what you're describing, where it's a specific use case, but it's start to finish. And I do think that would be super exciting, you know, once it comes out, because then you could spend your time doing more interviews versus all of the small things that you have to
All
do
the
after
little
the
things that
interview.
are really just nitty-gritty, right?
Yeah.
It's funny. I wanted to love Descript, but I hate Descript. I just
Do
can't edit in it. It's so frustrating. You code. I don't know what it is. You just go to click and drag and just to cut a clip and, you know, like crop that little part over, and it just may I have to do it like three times. I'm like, no. So I use CapCut, which is like the TikTok version of an editor.
Okay.
That's a fantastic little tool. It's like got everything you want in it and nothing else as far as
Yeah,
video editing
no,
goes.
I've heard CapCut is easier too for like just getting clips. Like I think it's probably the one of the more popular tools for just to get a clip, yeah.
What are you saying to marketing leaders? Because there's people that are very much tactical, that know how to get in there and build these things themselves. But what do you think marketing leaders that are less tactical should be doing to prepare for AI?
So there's a couple of things. One is that marketing as we know it is not gonna ever be the same again because of all of this AI stuff. These are not just, I mean, they are tools, but they're more than tools. I mean, this is like before marketing operations were the thing, or maybe sales operations were the thing. You know, if you're not thinking about this stuff as a marketing leader, You're going to have a lot of problems because if your competition is and they're using these tools and can cut their costs and use those costs, for example, to generate more leads or whatever it is, they're going to beat you in the marketplace. And also, what's happening too is it's from the top down. Like a lot of investors are looking at startups and saying, hey, why can't you use AI to cut your costs more? Like, especially in marketing, sales, and customer success, because those are very rich for AI use cases. So as a marketing leader, like you can't ignore it. Two, you can't also like you need to start like playing around with the tools yourself. You don't need to become an expert, but you just at least need to, maybe once in a while open ChatGPT and try it, things like that. And then it helps for you to actually create a plan for how you're going to get your team using AI tools. There's different options, everything from courses out there that team can go through to like doing a workshop where you bring in someone. But it's not just teaching them the tools, it's also having accountability that they're actually using them. And the same way you roll out a new tool in a MarTech stack and you create accountability around its usage and how it's effective, what's our ROI from this tool? It's the same way you have to treat AI. So if you actually have a head of ops or marketing ops, they can sort of be the champion and stuff and work with you on these things because it's not different than rolling out marketing operations tools.
Yeah, it is different. It's almost like a different way of thinking and approach to marketing ops. But the more I play with it, the more I feel like I'm like, this is a marketing ops thing mostly. A lot of AI is. I guess you could be using that for ideation on the front end, but it feels very ops heavy because it's coming to sneak into all the different tools and then requires ops to configure it all. It's too bad most companies suck at marketing ops. I'm like, oh no.
Well, yeah, that is true. It ends up being marketing ops at companies because companies use a bunch of other tools and everything needs to work together. And there's also the team environment where people need shared access. So that's why it ends up being marketing ops heavy. But what's like if you have a good marketing ops person or manager or leader, they also know how to do everything. Like they know how to evaluate a tool. Like they start with the use case. They don't even look at the tool. They start with like what's a challenge. Then they look at the tools, look at pricing, look at like an onboarding plan. So they just know how to roll out tools properly. And if you know how to do that for marketing ops tools, you would know how to do it for AI tools. You might need to work with an AI consultant or something, but you need someone internally who's sort of managing this process too.
Man. Oh, ops people. They're already incredibly rare. Probably going to get more rare as the AI thing comes on. It's probably
Yeah,
time to be in
no,
marketing ops and focus on AI.
and if you are, by the way, in marketing ops, I mean, and interested in AI, some of the best AI people that I've seen had a lot of success come from a marketing ops background, because to them, these are just new tools. They know how to, roll out new tools and how to help companies roll them out.
So, one last question for you. As somebody who's growing an audience, where do you think AI is going to be the most helpful for people to come who want to grow an audience in the future and are just now getting started? Do you feel like it becomes more of a hindrance and that it just makes it so much harder to stick out because now it's easier for everybody to make content? Or do you feel like it's going to help accelerate some people forward, knowing that they can have more, be able to be more prolific this way?
I think it does both, but in different ways. So I think if you're putting out average content, now you have a lot of competition because ChatGPT without even that much effort can generate average content. So now you're going to be competing against AI generated content if your content is average. On the other hand, all of this content does draw in more attention. It does some ways all sort of support each other. So if you have really good content, even if some of it is sort of AI assisted, is maybe a better phrase, where some of it is 80% AI and you put in the final 20%, well, now you can scale that quality content and do it at scale or cheaper, or you can do it for your clients cheaper. And sort of use that leverage to generate more income or more career success or progression for yourself. So I think it's kind of both sides. I think if you invest into learning the AI tools, invest time and effort, you're going to end up being on the side that it actually helps money and income wise. Whereas if you just sort of ignore the tools, well, now you're going to have a lot more competition and things like that.
Fantastic. So if you don't have a unique, differentiated point of view or something worth saying, it's going to be harder. But if you have something worth saying or are working towards getting, like, just have a whole perspective on learning and growing in the light, but I won't dive into that here. But essentially, if you're doing the right things and taking the right steps for being found and doing cool stuff that not a lot of other people are doing, it's going to help you. If you're just trying to become prolific for the sake of prolific, being prolific, it's going to work against you because now everybody can do that.
Exactly. And yeah, like it can almost be a hindrance or a multiplier. So it's kind of like your choice and how serious you take it.
There you go. Andrew, where can people go to learn more from you and connect with you on all the resources you've developed around AI?
Sure. So the best place is LinkedIn. If you just type in my name, Andrew Bolis, Bolis. You'll find me. I share these carousels and almost mini guides on there pretty frequently that people like. Yeah, so that's the best place to connect with me. I specifically cover AI for marketers. So I think if you're a marketer, you'll find my resources very helpful.
Andrew, thank you so much again for joining me.
Thank you for having me on, Dan.